So today, I'm talking about meta. The importance of cultivating meta for everyone unconditionally and how to do that. So meta, as I think many of you are familiar with, metta is one of the Brahma Viharas, one of the divine abidings or sublime social attitudes. It can be translated as goodwill, friendliness, love, loving kindness. And each of those words as a translation has its merits. There's certain contexts in which it really makes sense to talk about love. There's certain context is what really makes sense to talk about friendliness. So at least today, I will use the term meta, because kind of like dukkha and various other terms that we use, there's not a real good translation for it. So not a translation that captures all of the meaning. So just to review, in terms of the Brahma Viharas or divine abidings, there's metta, the goodwill, karuna or compassion, mudita or sympathetic joy, and upeka or equanimity. So I really love the way of envisioning the Brahma Viharas as being goodwill, love for all beings. And when the beings that we love, when we see them suffer, we feel compassion. And when we see the beings that we love happy, we feel sympathetic joy. And then equanimity is a, you know, spaciousness and a wisdom that we cultivate in order to be able to balance these things. So the usual, so these, I like calling these as well the sublime social attitudes, because these all have to do with our attitudes towards other beings. So that's their social emotions. And the usual view is that we can't do much about the emotions that we feel for other people, right? It's kind of dependent on their character and their behavior and our own personality and preferences, and some people we like and some people we don't. But from the Buddhist point of view, any restriction on our ability to extend the Brahma Viharas to anyone is based in self-attachment, which of course is one of the critical ingredients in creating delusion and suffering. So for example, we tend to be stingy with our goodwill when somebody has hurt or disappointed us, or as we feel they're kind of threatening us in some way. Kind of as if by withholding our goodwill, we'll be able to punish them for what they've done. And we rarely, I think of ourselves as being vindictive, but if we really start to explore the subtleties of the Brahma Viharas, we find, in fact, that sometimes we are. Another example is it's difficult to feel compassion for someone who's caused a lot of hurt and damage in the world or to us and willfully continues to do so. I mean, it's like if we withhold our goodwill and compassion, we'll make them mend their ways. We may feel righteous in our lack of compassion. But if we really examine our feelings and thoughts, we'll find there's a fair amount of self-interest in maintaining a worldview where we're right and they're wrong. So we may have a good point. There may be legitimacy to our view or our opinion, but the part that impedes feeling one of the Brahma Viharas is about self. So we also resist, you know, to just extend the Brahma Viharas, resist developing a sense of equanimity, for instance, towards someone who's made us angry or hurt us, as if by holding on to our distress, you know, we'll make sure the person doesn't get away with it. So the opposite of metta or goodwill is ill will, of course, which is one of the three poisons. Dvesha, which can be also translated as aversion, hostility, or hatred. And that mixed in there as well is fear. So fear, anger, and hatred are intimately related, kind of different stages of ill will with delusion mixed in. So it usually starts with some kind of fear, some kind of sense of self-preservation, some kind of fear that we won't get what we need, that we'll be harmed in some way, we'll be taken advantage of in some way, or someone else will. And anger arises as an instinct to protect something. And now you throw in some delusion, which is we are separate. We are, you know, we inherently exist and we're separate from other beings. And then we start othering the people that we are feel threatened by or we're angry with. We, you know, blame them for our misfortune and conclude they must be fundamentally different than we are in some way. And this overrides our natural empathy and compassion. And if we don't do anything about it, our attitude can harden into hostility and hatred. So I'm only going to do one breakout today, and then I'll finish up. But what I wanted us to explore first was to reflect so that each person has kind of a personal context for this discussion on metta and how to cultivate it. And that is to take a few minutes to reflect on who, for whom do you feel aversion, dislike, stinginess, judgment, anger, basically a lack of goodwill. So this can be a person or a group of people. You find it very difficult to feel goodwill. You might feel, you know, so again, anger, resentment, aversion, dislike, stinginess, judgment. And I'll break us out and try to, you know, we'll just take like 10 minutes total and have each person share something. But let's not name names. You know, let's not assume that the other people in our group have the same political opinions we do, for instance. Just, you know, be speak in kind of general terms. You know, there are certain people that act in certain ways as from my perspective or whatever. Or maybe it's more personal than that. But without naming names, kind of cop to those beings or a being that you find it very difficult to feel metta for. All right. Okay. So I am guessing that most people found it fairly easy to call to mind someone or some group of people for whom it is difficult to easily feel compassion or feel goodwill. Goodwill being it's the precursor to compassion, right? If you don't feel goodwill for someone and you see them suffering, like you don't feel compassion. So even just this very basic goodwill. So it's important to remember that the sublime social attitudes are they're essential for our ground of practice. So they transform our habitual self-centered emotions, ill will, hard-heartedness, stinginess, jealousy, resentment, attachment, distress. So they transform these emotions into positive and supportive emotions. So self-centered emotions cause us to generate negative karma, which of course causes a lot of issues in our lives, disturbances in our meditation and in our mind. It makes it impossible to practice fully and deeply when we're clinging to or caught up in hate or anger or nurturing ill will. So doing that, I'm going to talk more about Buddhaghosa in a little bit, a 5th century Indian Theravadan monk and scholar, and he described it as, when we are nurturing ill will, it's like picking up a burning ember or a piece of excrement and throwing it at someone. I mean, you know, you might hurt them or get them dirty, but you're going to burn yourself and make yourself stinky first. So when we cultivate the sublime social attitudes, we're doing it for the sake of both self and other. So it's important to remember, you know, when we're trying to cultivate goodwill for someone who's doing harm, for instance, if we just think about it in terms of like we're doing it for them, that can be hard. I mean, we're not really that motivated to cultivate goodwill or do something nice for this person. Even if we're really saintly, we should do that. But at least we can do it, you know, motivated by our own desire to keep our own body and mind more at peace. I mean, maybe, frankly, the person doesn't really deserve it. Maybe they've caused great harm, acted with arrogance, lack of concern for other beings, enacted greed or violence, destructiveness, willful ignorance, hateful speech, cruelty. You know, all of these things are reasons to, you know, for our natural anger response to arise, for our desire to set boundaries, not just like, oh, you know, everybody's lovely. So why would we cultivate goodwill towards such people? Doesn't that just encourage them? Let them off the hook? Dull our sense of moral outrage? Our determination to stop them from doing further harm? You are all probably well aware, but just to say it out loud, cultivating metta does not rule out any particular action. So cultivating unconditional Dalai Lama kind of metta does not rule out any particular action. We may need or decide to take very strong action, set boundaries, reduce harm, even stop someone through drastic measures, get them arrested, lock them in jail, whatever, maybe even through self-defense, do them harm. That may be necessary, but it's possible to do that even with a sense of goodwill. It's not easy, but it is possible. To some extent, goodwill is even just compatible with anger. I mean, if you just think about it in terms of interacting with a child, and you know, you may be upset that the child has done something that is endangering them or something, but when you interact with them, overall, you're still concerned about their well-being. How you respond, you may even speak kind of in sternly in some anger, but only because you care, only because you want to take care of them. And if you observe human interactions objectively, you see goodwill, compassion, sympathetic joy, equanimity are more effective ways to deal with people than ill will, hard-heartedness, envy, emotional volatility. So I think most people know this quote from the Dhammapada, from the Buddha. It's different translations of it. Hostilities aren't stilled through hostility. Regardless, hostilities are stilled through non-hostility. This is an unending truth. So how do we cultivate goodwill? So in Buddhaghosa, that monk from the 5th century, he wrote the Visuddhimagga, the Path of Purification. And he defines metta this way, which I think is really beautiful. He calls it loving kindness. Loving kindness is characterized here as promoting the aspect of welfare. Its function is to prefer welfare. It is manifested as the removal of annoyance. Its proximate cause is seeing lovableness in beings. It succeeds when it makes ill will subside. So I'll read that one again. So loving kindness is characterized as promoting the aspect of welfare. Its function is to prefer welfare. It is manifested as the removal of annoyance. Its proximate cause is seeing lovableness in beings. It succeeds when it makes ill will subside. So the key to this being a spiritual practice is, I mean, how many people do you naturally see as lovable? If you just kind of, just based on your preferences and your habits and chance, there's probably not a whole lot of people in your life you think like, oh, what a lovable person. On the other hand, how many people in your life are annoying? Probably a whole lot more. So what we work on is cultivating the ability to extend this, you know, sense of welfare and removal of annoyance, the subsiding of ill will beyond, you know, beyond those for whom it feels easy and natural. So the classic method of this, which many of you are familiar with, is, you know, in a quiet moment in meditation or other times, to call to mind a being for whom it is, they are naturally lovable to you. It's easy for you to feel that. A child, a pet, a loved one. You know, it's great if you feel this for your parents. Some people feel it for their parents. And you call that being to mind. Say, may you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be at ease. May you be happy. And you sincerely wish it. So as you say, you sincerely wish it. May you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be at ease. May you be happy. So the practice is once we have that feeling, we're familiar with that feeling, then we call to mind someone else, some other being, for whom maybe it's a little bit less natural and easy to feel that. And can we feel, extend that feeling toward them? May you be free from fear and anxiety. May you be at ease. May you be happy. And usually what we feel is as we extend that, you know, there's a little bit of like a little bit of resistance or withdrawal or, putting conditions on it. May you be free from fear and anxiety as long as you stop doing that thing, as long as you apologize for what you did or something. But this being an unconditional thing. And then at some point, you work yourself in there as well. And this really, where you work that in depends on how your relationship with yourself is. You know, maybe it's very easy for you to extend metta to yourself. Maybe it's not. So you insert yourself in there on that spectrum. So ideally, we do this until we can extend metta for the people for whom we feel the most ill will and aversion. It's understood that that's not easy, because this frees our heart. It, you know, it has nothing to do with the actions we're going to do, nothing going to do with the, the beliefs we hold about what's right and wrong. It's, you know, It's whether our own heart is open or not. We're no longer, you know, there's also that, you know, anger is like imbibing poison, hoping to hurt somebody else. So we're no longer imbibing poison or crippling our own practice because of this other person or group of people. So this is very, very, very challenging. So Buddhaghosa, the 5th century monk, wrote many, 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 many pages on how to cultivate metta. And I love this writing of his, because the very fact that it's so long and so involved and has so many steps suggests to me is, well, I guess 5th century monks didn't find this any easier than we do. So these are just quickly I'm going to cover nine practices or nine steps you can go through. And if you're at all curious about these, I did a podcast on this on the Zen Studies site a ways back. So if you just go to that site and you type in metta, that podcast should come up, and these are listed. So he says, first of all, recall that your enemy wishes bad things upon you, and you bring them about for them by dwelling in anger and ill will. So I love this. It's like very clever psychologically. We're not starting from a place of like, remember to be saintly. It's like, in order to get yourself to feel metta or to let go of your ill will, recall that your enemy, you're just making your enemy happy. You're just doing to yourself what your enemy would like to do to you. And specifically, he says, when you're angry and resentful, you're ugly, in pain, likely to drive away your friends, and more likely to make bad decisions that will bring about ill fortune for you. So the Buddhaghosa quotes the Buddha, by repaying an angry man in kind, you will be worse than the angry man and not win the battle hard to win. You will yourself do to yourself the things that help your enemy. So thinking like this, we may gain some little bit of determination to let go of our resentment and anger. If not for our own sake, then at least to deny our enemy the satisfaction of seeing us suffer. So a second one is, remember some controlled and purified state in that person, which inspires confidence when remembered. So he points out how, you know, people are complicated. They're not all good. They're not all bad. So even people who do terrible things have other aspects to them. So he said, for example, maybe somebody, their verbal conduct is really shabby. They say a lot of crappy stuff, but their actual bodily conduct isn't bad. So, you know, for me, I think about people who may be doing something in the world that is really, really harmful or terrible, but they treat their own family kindly. I mean, that doesn't, for me, excuse their behavior in any way. But if I'm able to think about how, in all sincerity, they care for their own children or they care for their own families, that helps soften the attitude a little bit. And sometimes when I feel ill will or aversion towards someone, I also look for some evidence of innocence in them. You know, the way they tend a plant on their desk, or they have a funny bumper sticker on their car or something, like some little sign of their humanness. And it sometimes softens the resentment a little. So the third recommendation of Buddhaghosa is, if someone seems to have no redeeming qualities, okay, so you've tried number two, right? And you're like, I really can't think of any redeeming qualities. Try to summon compassion for that fact. So now we have someone who, like, you cannot think of any redeeming qualities. That is sad. that is, they cannot be living a happy life if they're that mean or self-centered or you know, and bad behavior comes from ill will, greed, delusion. So somebody totally caught up in those things and acting those things out will eventually suffer, and they probably are already. And this is one example where, like, you know, goodwill needs to come before compassion, but actually sometimes compassion can awaken goodwill. So we see somebody suffer. I mean, we're not totally hard-hearted, right? So if we can really see how somebody's suffering sometimes, then it opens up our goodwill. So the fourth is reflect on the damage anger does you. Because of the law of karma or moral cause and effect, we're the heirs to our deeds. So this is that kind of, you know, picking up the ember or the excrement. Buddha Gosa offers this verse. Suppose an enemy has hurt you in what is his domain. Why try yourself as well to hurt your mind? This is not his domain. If you get angry, then maybe you make him suffer, maybe not. Though with the hurt that anger brings, you certainly are punished now. So sometimes this is very difficult to see in ourselves, but I suspect we've all had the experience of having a friend or family member who's just, you know, just seething with resentment about something. And they go on and on and on about it, and they go on and on and on about how they've been victimized, and this person's so terrible, or this institution's so terrible, and, you know, and being witness to that and seeing how, okay, some of it is natural, but then when you're just perseverating on it, it just, you know, is not helping. So the fifth is think about the Buddha's words. He says, when a fool hates a person who has no hate, so if we manage to have no hate, someone who is purified and free from every blemish, so such evil he will find comes back on him, so the one who is spewing the hate, us, as does fine dust thrown up against the wind. So you know, the person is spewing hate, if you don't engage it, it'll just go back in their face. He also says, think about the conduct of the Buddha and the other noble ones in the past who have manifested transcendent patience, boundless goodwill, etc. Personally, I've never found summoning ideals to mind to be all that helpful, because then I just compare myself and I don't know. But maybe you find that good. Maybe think of the Dalai Lama or Thich Nhat Hanh or something. Reflect on the advantages of cultivating metta. So there's a really convenient list here. You sleep in comfort. You wake in comfort. You dream no evil dreams. You're dear to human beings. You're dear to non-human beings. Deities guard you. Fire and poison and weapons do not affect you. Your mind is easily concentrated. The expression on your face is serene. You die unconfused. And you'll be reborn in a heaven realm. So, there's benefits to feeling metta instead of ill will. Then there's also deconstruct who it is you're angry with. So, Buddha Gosa said, this is called the exercise resolution into elements. Who are we angry with? Who or what are we angry with? Is it the person's hair you're angry with? No. Is it their nails? Is it their legs? Is it their arms? Is it their face? Their liver? Their kidneys? Eyeballs? Sensations? Thoughts? You know, I mean, we might say, well, it's the person as a whole that we're angry with. But I mean, Buddhism, it's all about, like, we have no fixed self-essence. So ultimately, we can't find anywhere to permanently affix our blame. And in a more practical sense, this is you know, when we have a lot of resentment for someone, or we tend to create a very fixed idea of who they are. And usually that ends up being way oversimplified. And if we really interact with the person, it's much more complex than that. And then finally, very practical, which I think is sweet as well. It's like, okay, you've tried all that, like, kind of mental and emotional stuff. Give the subject of your resentment a gift. This is like, well, I don't know. You know, if you can't really summon the feeling, just, you know, give them a gift, and then, you know, maybe enacting that kind of goodwill will somehow affect you at another level. So, we have a few minutes left. Open it up for comments and questions. Just go ahead and unmute yourself if you want to say something.
So, I have a question. This is Jin Ryu speaking. I kind of got this idea from Gyokuko's talk about 4 or 5 weeks ago. And if I am saying metta toward an enemy, and I have the four things, safety, happiness, I add, may you be in the best possible health, and may you live in peace. If I were to add somewhere in that mix, may you see things clearly, or may you recognize the truth, or may you, if I go so far, may you realize your own wrong ways. I mean, am I not inserting self-attachment when I do that?
I don't know. Good question. Seems like it would depend. I certainly could imagine saying that and there being some, like, may you wake up to what I've seen, you know, and see in what way you are flawed. But on the other hand, I could see it being totally sincere about, and that kind of acknowledgement that, you know, people wouldn't, they wouldn't be acting like assholes if they were enlightened. If they felt loved and safe and understood they weren't separate from other beings. Did you want to say something, Ruth?
Well, yes. If we think do no harm, I could wish that perhaps a person with power, clout, I could say, may you do no harm to yourself and those in your realm or those around you, you know, without my attachment of definition. You know, I wish you well, and may you be released from all harm, meaning to their body and to their spirit, to their living being, because that's really my respecting them as another living creature being.
Right. That's beautiful.
So Domio, I really appreciate your giving a talk on what I consider the final frontier of meta practice, which is extending goodwill towards what's called the enemy or those difficult. Mm-hmm. So I just appreciate those because I really have been focusing my meta practice on meta towards myself and meta towards my community and meta outwards that way, just kind of getting myself firmly established, extending it that way. So it's kind of helpful to have that nudge to like, okay, like push that effort a little bit. So I think both, you know, both are really helpful and important, and sometimes it's really hard to establish and direct that inwards. There's lots of obstacles there as well, but it's also in this time of divide, it's really important to kind of stretch myself and extending it outwards. So thank you for that. Helpful to have some pointers and helpful to kind of humanize it, say like, you know, if you're not feeling super saintly, there's still help. It's still help for the efforts. So I appreciate that.
Yeah. And I think that's a really good point that, and you know, yeah, so I focused on that aspect today, you know, probably for obvious reasons. There's a lot going on in the world and a lot of blame and divisiveness floating around, and you know, it's very easy for us to forget that, you know, our practice says, you know, cultivate metta toward all. Not that it's easy, but we don't have an excuse. That, you know, which I think most of us, myself included, I want to be like, well, I have an excuse for not extending metta toward that person. Which is like, I mean, I may be able to say, I'm not able to extend metta at this time, but not to feel self-justified in that. But I focused on that aspect of it. But yeah, I mean, generally the like I said, the progression is like you start, you really have to be able to do it for yourself in a way before you can fully do it for others. And to, you know, so like the practice of the feeling is an important thing to establish. I would imagine otherwise, maybe, you know, if you're jumping, not only is it difficult necessarily to jump right to somebody who's difficult, but it might not even really be meta. You might be kind of not, if you haven't really firmly established what it feels like to just have that unconditional goodwill.
And I appreciate your highlighting that, like, I think one of the ways that working with metta has been so helpful for me is just to really look at what hinders the wish, what prevents me from that sincere extension of goodwill, and how you kind of summarize that into like, it's some form of self-attachment. So then being able to really be honest with what in me, what kind of delusion or whatever it is. And then I can work with that. Right. And it's hard to acknowledge those things and hard to look, but once you can kind of see it, then you can actually work with softening that. So,
yeah. And it's really like, in a way, it's kind of like our precept practice and other practices where, I mean, I don't know, if we practice it without an agenda, like I've got to manage to feel metta for my deepest enemy, and if I don't, I'm a failure. But it's more of just like the precept, it shows us things. It's a mirror. It helps us understand. So like, yeah, I mean, we may notice, like, I, you know, find it difficult to extend metta toward this person because, and oh, what is hindering that? And that may not go away just because I see it, but having seen it, then we can shine the light of practice on it, you know, we can understand better. Well, thank you, everyone. Let me just do a little closing verse here. Abiding in this ephemeral world like a lotus in muddy water, the mind is pure and goes beyond. Thus we bow to Buddha. Buddhas throughout space and time. All honored ones, Bodhisattvas, Mahasattvas. Wisdom beyond wisdom, Maha Prajna Paramita. Thank you all for coming.
Thank you yet again. Ciao.
Thanks, everyone.
Bye. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.